But again, my name is Malik Rahim. I've been a member of the Green Party now for 18 years. I joined the Greens when being green wasn't fashionable. I joined at a time that many people classified Greens as being crackpots, kooks, you know, those who marched by the beat of a different drum. But I also know that that drum beat was one of truth. One that truly stood for environmental justice and peace. Many of the things that I learned when I first joined the Green Party, now is becoming fashionable. Solar energy, bioremediation. Why is it so important for us to make sure that we preserve life as we know it? New Orleans is a city that shows the contradiction, that shows why we must change and we must continue to change and be the voice and the conscience of this green movement that is going on now. Because if we don't, it'll be captured into another form of capitalism, green capitalism. And we have to make sure that it don't get lost, the green movement, and become just another capitalist movement. Whereas instead of based upon saving our environment, it's just based upon making money. I'm not saying that making money is wrong, but it's always pushed me in a different direction when I talk to individuals that only advocate for it since they are making profits. And like I said, New Orleans was a clear example of that contradiction. Again, I founded an organization in New Orleans called Common Ground. At Common Ground, we started with it from the meager existence of just four people at my kitchen. Brandon Darby and Scott Crow, two real bearers of peace and justice, who came to New Orleans basically to see about Robert King Wilkerson, the only freed member of the Angola three political prisoners. Two of them who have spent 36 years in solitary confinement. King spent 29 years in solitary under investigation. It's probably the longest investigation ever held in America. But it made him spend 29 years under that investigation. But it was through Scott and Brandon's effort to come and see about King that an entire organization sprung from their willingness. Yes, in the aftermath of Katrina, because I didn't leave New Orleans. You can't tell me that you're a community organizer or so-called community leader. I don't classify myself as a community leader. Because only weak people need a leader. Strong people only need someone to represent them. I don't classify myself as a weak person, and I don't classify my community as a weak community. But it always confounds me when we see individuals that say that they are community leaders and representatives and represent this community and community organizers, and then at the exact moment when the community needs them most, they vanish. What happened in New Orleans, it wasn't just a disaster, it was a tragedy. And that tragedy was because of our response to that disaster. It was a tragedy that was based on race first, then class. It was one that could have been avoided if this nation had a real conscience. But I want you to understand, we can't just be a conscience for the green movement. We have to once again take the helm and become the conscience of this nation. Because most of us in America is drunk. We're drunk on prosperity. We don't care what happened to anyone else. Out of sight, out of mind. We don't care. You know, as long as I could drive my SUV, as long as I could live this lavish lifestyle of being less than a little, maybe around 5% of the world's population, consuming almost 30% of the world's resources, causing almost 40% of the world's pollution. We don't care. And if anyone doubt what I'm saying, they just look who have ran this nation for the last 8 years. We have been drunk on prosperity. And we have allowed a person to become the president of this nation, holding the most powerful position in the world for 8 years, who was drunk on power. Right now, if everybody in this room would get together and we all drink until we're about to fall out, that's the only way you allow a person that is drunker than us to drive us home. Because if anybody was sober, they would say, get him from behind the wheel. Or, no, it's no way. But because we were so drunk on prosperity, we allowed this man to become the president of this nation. And we all right now is reeling from the repercussion of that action. We are living in some very dangerous times. Very dangerous time. Not I, because at 61, I'm seeing the heydays of my life. But that next generation gonna be that generation that's going to define whether or not life as we know it today will still exist. And I'm going to say it again, especially to those in this room that is under 35. Your generation, you're going to be the one that they're going to define whether or not life as we know it today still exists for your children and grandchildren. Everybody saying that, man, the economy is the number one issue. I disagree. I don't care how much money you have. You give it all up for some clean air or drinkable water. Saving our environment is too important. Some say the war. I lived through that era once before in Vietnam. We had an anti-war movement that was gung-ho about ending the war. But it ended when the last troop left Vietnam. And we left that beautiful nation in a toxic mess. Since the last troop pulled out of Vietnam, thousands of Vietnamese dies annually from Agent Orange. Yes, now we're in another unjust war. And no, we are not using Agent Orange. But we're using something more heinous than Agent Orange. We're using depleted uranium shells. So we live in this nation, one of the oldest, the cradle of civilization, that by our so-called president, by his spiritual advisor, Billy Graham, who stated that if the Garden of Eden was on earth, this is where it was. And look how we're leaving. We didn't care that from the period of the first Gulf War to the launching of the second Gulf War that we had this nation incarcerated with sanctions that was steady killing children. Some say that collateral, that was just collateral damage, and hell with it. It's just a few Iraqi kids that's dying. And most of us didn't care because of the fact, again, it was something that was happening 8,000 miles away from us. So we didn't pay it. At least no troops was dying. We had it under sanctions. But then came New Orleans. Then came Katrina. A government that just, I cannot say that it failed to help its own citizens. Because to imply that it fails is also mean to imply that it tried. And it didn't even try. I truly believe that New Orleans was just a laboratory test for the military. To test how long it would take for social order to disintegrate into a pure anarchy, and how long it would take them to restore that social order. What it was based upon? It was based upon racism. Many people believe that it was God sent, that Katrina was able to do what the government couldn't do, and that is remove a segment of that city population that was no longer tolerated. So we didn't care when a segment of this nation closed its borders to its own citizen simply because of skin color. Nobody cared, because they demonized us, took our humanity away from us, which every nation do before it invade or go out to destroy anyone else. They take it through a process of dehumanization. You cease to be a Vietnamese, you're a gook. You cease to be a German, you was a kraut. You cease to be a Japanese, you was just a Jap. In New Orleans, you cease to be black, you was a looter. What was defined as a looter? It wasn't just able-bodied men or able-bodied women. It was every man, woman, and child that was of an African-American . And what did we do? And I want you to imagine this building being on fire and everybody going to that door for the exit, but only whites is allowed to leave. The blacks in here is told to go back into that burning fire and put it out. Put it out or perish. Then residents of public housing. They have the military to come through and force everyone out of their development at gunpoint. Never to be allowed to return. Because Whitey was displaced, sent all over the nation. Their homes was demolished. Not because of the hurricane or hurricane related damage. Simply because of greed. There wasn't no real outcry. We seen and witnessed more outrage over what transpired in general Louisiana than what transpired in the walls. And I tell anyone that if those who say they stand for peace and justice would have stood up in New Orleans, it wouldn't have been a general. So we have to understand what is our priorities, and then we have to understand what type of sacrifice are we willing to make. Because some may say, oh, well, it only happened in the Deep South. But I beg to differ. I went to New York, and when I got off the plane, and the first thing I heard of is an attorney and his wife savagely beaten because they dared to stop a police in New York and ask him why he was brutalizing a child. Everybody know about Sean Bell. And I tell anyone up in Harlem, if there's a disaster there, will they allow you as a resident of Harlem to find refuge in downtown Manhattan? Or will they just quarantine you in Harlem? These are dangerous times. For one week in Louisiana and New Orleans, we didn't live under racism, we lived under fascism. It was allowed to prevail. Because when you tell a people that you no longer have the right to exist, it's not racism. It done went far beyond racism. You tell them that, you know, you're not even worthy of having health care. That the bodies of those that have died tragically, we won't even pick them up. We're going to leave them there. Because it took Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! To expose it, for them to pick up the bodies of those killed by vigilantes that was allowed to roam the streets killing young African American men at will. It took Amy Goodman. Same way now, in a community, maybe 1 mile wide and 3 miles in length, that had a population of 12,000 during pre-Katrina, that today only have less than 1,000. An area that lost almost 2,000 homes. And 1,000 of its citizens to die. We have a school in this area, MLK, that lost at least one child out of every classroom. Still not rebuilt. The only person that is there doing anything is basically Brad Pitt. But the French Quarters is up and running. The Garden District is booming. Conventions and the Convention Center is back. Superdome was rebuilt in record time. And the Saints is once again losing. So it's back to the norm. But going to the Ninth Ward, going to New Orleans East, that 3 years after the hurricane, with only half of the city population back, and a police force that's now operating at 115%, as compared to the force during pre-Katrina, those communities are still under military occupation. But nobody cares. But if we could be under military occupation 3 years after a hurricane in New Orleans, and nobody cares, what would happen if it's here? These are dangerous times. We have to come together and understand the situation that we are in. We have to understand that there's nothing greater that we should be working with as a political organization than to repeal the Patriot Act. That's what give them the right. Do you know that George Bush could have declared, if he wanted to, and we all are blessed that he didn't, a state of emergency when the economy collapsed? He had that right. And under that right, he could have also suspended the election. He had that right. But we don't see the danger. We don't see the danger in what happened in New Orleans. Because some say, man, that can only happen there. And it'll never happen again. But it will happen again if we refuse to act. That's why I'm running for office. That's why I'm running for Congress. Do I think I can win? I tell individuals I've won every day. Because I'm going to make you, I'm going to challenge you to address these issues. You can't bury it. If nobody else cares, I care. I had to live and witness seeing kids being denied the basics of life. Some could go on back to their little music. Some could go back to their little jobs and do whatever. I can't. And I'm not one that is naive to violence. I'm a former member of the Black Panther Party. I have been in shootouts as members of the Black Panther Party. I've served time in prison, and I've served time on death row. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And I've also been to Iraq. But nothing compared me for what happened in here in America. And my greatest fear, what will happen if there's a pandemic crisis? And there's only a limited amount of vaccine. Who will determine who get it? And what would happen to those who are denied that vaccine? What's going to happen when our air becomes so polluted that we can't even be outside except for a limited amount of time? Will we have to walk around with oxygen containers the way we walk around now with bottled water? What's going to happen when our water supply become undrinkable? What's going to happen when these trillions of dollars of debt that we are incurring now become due? Who going to pay it? What's going to happen when the nuclear arsenal that we have right now become antiquated? How shall we dispose of it? It won't happen on its own. But the solutions is in this room. That's if we act. No, you up here in Pittsburgh, no, you won't be able to vote for me in New Orleans, but you can still support my campaign. Not by just making a donation, but by getting actively involved. You can make phone calls from here. Those who can, you can come down. We have that responsibility, not to me, but to our children and our children's children. We have that responsibility. I tell you this, if I win, it will be a full investigation of what transpired. It wouldn't be just like that People's Tribune that was just washed under the rug, and then the government responds to it by basically destroying the organization that sponsored it. It definitely won't be. You're going to have to tell me why you closed down 5 public housing developments and you displaced 4,500 families. You got to give me a reason. You got to tell me why, in the midst of a construction boom, $6 billion worth of construction going on right now as I speak in New Orleans, and unemployment among young African American men is still roughly 30%. You got to give me an answer for this. That's why I'm running. You can't just tell me about, oh, well, it's going to be a better day tomorrow because Obama is president. Because I know he don't have no magic wand. You can't tell me that never again we'll close our borders to anyone, let alone our own citizens, simply because of the color of their skin. You can't tell me that we're going to take billions of tons of toxic flood water and release it in the most fragile environment simply because we're in a hurry to remove it from a city that we didn't treat it. Did you know in the aftermath of Katrina we had to throw away, we had to dispose of over 300,000 refrigerators, another 200,000 deep freezers, 1.5 million air conditioners, 300,000 vehicles, all having one thing in common, and that's Freon. But all our environmental policies was waived because of the Patriot Act. So we was able to release this in our atmosphere. I want to hold them accountable. I need your help to make this happen. So I'm just not asking for those to just make again a little donation. I want somebody to do a sign-up sheet for me. And if you can, just sign that sheet. Give me your name and your email address. If you know anyone in New Orleans, tell them about my campaign. Even if you don't, tell your friends. Go on our website, thevotemalik.com. Go on the website of Common Ground. Because in closing, I'm going to tell you some of the things that we was able to do. Just that four individuals with $50. But that's what we started with. Brandon Darby, Scott Crow, Sharon Johnson, and myself. Sharon put up $30, I put up $20. With that, we said a prayer and went on faith. Since that meager beginning, we had now almost 20,000 people to volunteer just at Common Ground. We have raised a little over $3 million. And with that $3 million and those 20,000 people, we've been able to provide direct services to almost 200,000 people. We was able to start the first health clinic, and it's still the only free health clinic operating in New Orleans. We have a legal clinic, a bioremediation program, a wetland restoration program. We have gutted out over 3,000 homes. We have provided housing at pre-Katrina levels, because right now the rent have doubled in New Orleans. Right now we have people that is literally working themselves to death. Right now we have people losing their homes because the government won't give them no assistance to save their home. But at the same time, we are giving their homes away to any nonprofit that could write a good proposal. These are the things that we are doing, that we have done. And if I'm elected, we will do more. So again, I urge you, if you can come down on this, come down. If you can't, and you're willing to make some phone calls, make some phone calls. If you're willing to work with us, because that's all we're asking for, if we get 1,000 people to give us $10. And we can win this seat. And if we win this seat, it won't be just an office for residents in New Orleans or for members of the Green Party. But it'd be an office for all those that stand for environmental peace and justice. With that, I thank you. I don't know how much time I have, but if a couple of people want to ask, do a little Q&A, I'll answer a few questions.
Excuse me? Can you tell us a little bit about how Common Ground works?
Wow. Let's see. I'm going to tell you, it wouldn't have been a Common Ground if it wouldn't have been a Michael Moore. It wouldn't have been a common ground if it wouldn't have been a Veterans for Peace. Michael Moore, he gave us the initial funding. He gave us $40,000. And then he came back and he raised us $400,000. Cindy Sheehan, when she closed Camp Casey, she brought all our supplies down and gave them to us. David Chappelle, he gave us $150,000 so that we could start our training program. Bruce Springsteen gave us $100,000 so that we could start a homeless shelter for women. Steel Pulse, the Marley Brothers, Bonnie Raitt, those individuals who made a stand, they supplied 1/3 of the funding that we have received. Then it was small grants. We never received any grant or larger than, I believe, $15,000 or $20,000. But we had a few foundations that gave us those grants. And that probably added up to maybe another $300,000. The rest came from individuals that just sent us $5, $10 checks. Those who came down. See, I'm going to tell you one thing about it. See, when people of conscience come together, you know, I know I'm one of the oldest in this room, but some of those old timers up here, is anybody in here that served in Vietnam? Wow, you mean I'm the only veteran in here? But at the end of it, when we pulled the last troop out of Vietnam, we left the South Vietnamese government well-armed and supplied. And they couldn't last a year. Within a year, the North Vietnamese had overran them. With everything that we had supplied them, it was gone. And the reason why is because the South Vietnamese was fighting for money. But your North Vietnamese was fighting for under a commitment. They was committed to that cause. They was volunteering when the South Vietnamese had to do on-the-street drafts. That's the difference. That's the difference we saw at the beginning of Common Ground. We saw whites that came down and understood the privilege that they had as being white and used that privilege to work in African-American communities that was able to supply, fulfill a need that no one else would try to even fulfill. Those that didn't believe that every black in New Orleans was a looter. That came down and not in offering any charity, but solidarity. There's a person that been down about 3 or 4 times and worked with us in the community. And he lived in that community. Because we don't allow you to come down and work with us and live somewhere else. Why? Because we wanted to break the myth. We wanted to show the African-American community that there are some decent, that every white is not an oppressor. Every white is not an explorer. And at the same time, we wanted to show the whites that every black that's up in our community don't have a knife or a gun, that we all are not criminals, that we are God-fearing, hard-working individuals. And we did this. It never would have been a common ground if it would have been all black. If it would have been all black, they would have killed us. They would have killed us and said that the lie that they tried to portray was true. That I was an old black militant that put a spell on a bunch of young kids and had them out robbing, you know, and stealing, and then bringing all this ill-gotten gain to my house, and I'm selling it out of my house. It sounds funny, but that's what happened. And the only reason why, when they came to raid us, that it didn't happen is because they're seeing all these white kids. So they couldn't. They thought they had the wrong address. Now, these are the things that help us to get things started. You know, individuals that have made that stand, and they continue to make. When they closed down public housing, I would say over half of the people that stood out there and demonstrated against it, many of them getting maced and arrested, was former common grounds. So these are the things that can happen when people move off of commitment. When people are challenging. Because I'm going to tell you, unless we do stand up for justice cannot prevail on its own. It cannot, and there cannot be peace without justice. So again, you know, it was just the idea. And I'm going to tell you, they went through hardships. At one time, we had 700 volunteers living in an abandoned school building without any heat. In a winter with how many bathrooms? How many toilets?
Four.
Well, how many showers?
About the same number as seven. The summer we showered outside.
For the whole, that's for a whole winter. 700 people. And they endured. We couldn't even get the city to even give us a portalet. Say we have served over 180,000 people in the state of Louisiana. We are not even recognized as a relief organization. But we persevere. So again, it's that commitment. It was commitment that made those young people live under those harsh conditions. Sometimes I used to go down there to break my heart. I'd leave from there in tears, seeing how they was all piled up in these rooms, but seeing how they had to do without heat. Seeing individuals that had to go days before it was their turn to take a shower. But they persevered. Some cried, some left, but the majority stayed there. And to see smiles on their faces under these harsh conditions, it showed me, one, that it was winnable. Because I know that nothing would change the fact that this is the sacrifices that they were making. I know that there's another event that's going to happen, so I'll just take a couple of more questions and I'll keep them short as for my response. Is there any more? Well, again, if you take, and first of all, I just want everybody to know, no one had to leave New Orleans. No one had to leave the greater New Orleans area after Katrina. It didn't have to displace people and send them all around the United States. There was enough places that was safe in Louisiana, right there in the greater New Orleans area, that it could accommodate everybody from, that was affected by the flood. But this was done. Why the homeless population increased? Because for many of those who left, when they came back, they couldn't go into their homes. In public housing, it didn't just close them down. They put barbed wire fences around and steel plates on the windows and doors. So if you was from public housing and you came back and you couldn't get into your house, where you going? On the street. That's the reason why we started our women's center. If you came, if you're there and you need a job in the midst of this construction boom and nobody will hire you simply because you're black and you're from one of these housing developments that the work is going on in your development, where are you going at? But on the streets. That's the reason why that everybody, that the reason why New Orleans is in such a crime wave. Because people know that, hey, you know, you better have yours, because if you ain't got it, bro, nobody care. That's why you see so many families on the street. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to see a sad thing, see a bunch of kids that have to live on their own. See some of the fears that they have. I wish I could have brought, but it will be posted on my website. A third grade teacher had her class to write a letter to Obama. This is third grade. It wasn't asking for no clothes or toys. He was hearing them ask for, could you come in and help my mother repair the roof? You know, could you help get my father a job? Can you help get us a house? Because everybody heard about how these trailers was, that many of them was toxic. But that's all a person had to do, is just take some Boston ferns and put in there, and it would help alleviate the formaldehyde. But most people wasn't even afforded the opportunity to get that trail. We have lost more people after Katrina, in the aftermath of Katrina, during post-Katrina, of respiratory ailment, of stress, than those that died during Katrina. So these are the things that we have to always keep in mind when we look at the aftermath and those children. Because that's what it's having the deepest impact upon. Because unlike in the aftermath of 9/11, there was no trauma counselors. You know, our schools, gone. Our hospitals, gone. New Orleans is not a city.